Okay, so as promised, I'd like to continue with our tour of the Satipatthana Sutta, the four establishments of mindfulness, understanding that it's a gradual path, and as I've been emphasizing, it starts with quite simple aspects of our physical experience, such as the breath, and then it gradually progresses to include more and more subtle aspects of our experience, bringing them to awareness in more and more detail and with increasing refinement. So when we work with the first establishment of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of the body, it offers us a very powerful opportunity to sharpen our mindfulness and to begin to bring more and more refined awareness to quite subtle aspects of our experience. And there's no limit to what we can discover about being a human being when we really pay attention to our embodiment. That's why meditation masters such as Joseph Goldstein's first teacher, Munindraji, said, "Sit and know that you're sitting and the whole of the Dhamma will be revealed." So knowing that you're sitting basically on more and more refined levels. And this is in line with the instructions from the refrain of the Satipatthana Sutta where it says, "Mindfulness that, quote, there is a body is established in one to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world." So that phrase, bare knowledge, is what I've been referring to as bare awareness or bare attention. And it's amplified by the second part of that quote about abiding independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So touching back into the theme of this retreat, freedom here and now, this not clinging is a key aspect of our progress towards freedom. And clinging here means also resisting any energy, basically, of struggling with our experience, whether holding on to it or pushing away. But when we sit down and start to pay attention to the body, what often becomes most obvious is just how much we do cling and how quickly we move into concepts about our experience. Assessments and analysis and story and perceptions and judgments and views and opinions and beliefs of all kinds. Seems like anything is better than simply being present with the immediacy of what's happening in the body. And we also start to notice just how much of the time we're living in either the past or the future, lost in regrets, fantasies, worries, daydreams, and so on. But when we connect with the physical sensations of the body, we're automatically present because physical sensations don't happen in the past or the future. They're happening right now. So this is one key reason why training in mindfulness of the body is so powerful. It keeps us connected with present moment experience. But as I said the other night, for most of us, this is a key skill that we need to practice because of our tendency to privilege the intellect. And unfortunately, even the translation of sati as mindfulness can unconsciously reinforce this bias towards the mind. So we might understand mindfulness to mean thinking about our experience. So for me to hear Gil Fronsdal talk about bodyfulness rather than mindfulness really illuminated that distinction. So if we think that we're practicing bodyfulness, that shifts the whole orientation and brings it more in alignment with this first establishment. So coming back to the body helps us reconnect with the present moment, helps us recognize when we've been lost in some kind of mental activity. And to borrow some more teaching from Gil Fronsdal, he has a way of framing our experience. He has a way of framing up our experience in terms of the model of a wheel, a diagram of a wheel. So if you think of a series of concentric circles, we can think about the breath and the body as being at the hub of the wheel. So the body is at the center, and then as we start to move further away from the center of the wheel, we move into the mind and mental activity. And if there's no mindfulness, we end up on the very outer rim of the wheel, spinning out in proliferation, in papancha, which I mentioned briefly the other night. But just that can be a very useful feedback signal. So when we recognize that we've got lost in some kind of repetitive, looping, cycling kind of mental state, we might realize, oh, I'm way out on the center of the wheel. Come back to the hub. Come back to the center. Because the center of the wheel feels more stable. It feels to be moving less slowly than the outer rim. So I've put that together as a diagram here for those of you who might be a bit more cognitive. I didn't want to waste too many trees by printing you a copy for everyone, but if that is of interest, you can take a look at that later. We're going to be exploring that over the next few days. So training in what I call body literacy is a very powerful skill to develop. And even though the first establishment of mindfulness is mindfulness of the body, that is definitely not just a practice for beginners. So we can endlessly refine our attention, as we were doing earlier, on sensations of pressure and hardness and tingling and tightness and warmth, contraction, and so on. And as some of you know, when practicing in the tradition of the Burmese meditation master, Mahasi Sayadaw, when meditators in that tradition go to meet with the teachers for their practice meetings, they're expected to take 10 to 15 minutes just describing the physical sensations of the breath, all the different nuances for 10, 12, 15 minutes or so, just the breath. In the most refined detail possible. Just as reassurance, in meetings with me, I'm not going to be expecting 12 minutes of reporting on the physical sensations of the breath. Nevertheless, being able to sharpen our mindfulness in relation to physical sensations is very useful. On retreat, it leads directly to insight. And in daily life, it gives us very useful information about what's really happening in our experience. I don't think I'm alone in this, but we can misuse our minds to tell us all kinds of distorted things about ourselves and the world. But the body, for the most part, doesn't lie. So we can use it as a reference point to help us recognize at times some of the deeper emotional and psychological truths that we sometimes try to hide from ourselves. If we can practice mindfulness as a listening with kindness and compassion, then we can get more clarity about what's actually happening in our hearts and minds, rather than what we wish was true or what we're trying to convince ourselves is true. So to give just a simple, small example from my own experience, the first time I did a 3-month retreat at IMS, Joseph Goldstein was my assigned teacher for the individual meetings. And I'd never met him before, but I'd listened to a lot of his talks and I'd heard a lot of good things about him. So I was pretty much totally intimidated by him. And before every individual meeting, I'd be sitting outside his room rehearsing everything I was going to say in excruciating detail. And my body would be just slightly trembling and my mind would be judging myself for being so nervous, which of course made the whole thing worse. And this went on week after week. And then maybe about halfway through the retreat, I was sitting outside his room and I told myself, just stop it. Just stop being so nervous. And it seemed to work because I felt suddenly quite calm as I waited for my turn, and I was feeling pretty pleased with myself. Oh yeah, I've got through this. But when I went to open the door and I put my hand on the doorknob, my palm was sweating so much that I couldn't actually turn the door handle. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't quite as successful as I'd thought. So that's just one example of the body revealing something that my mind was trying to ignore or suppress. But eventually, when I was able to be more honest with what was happening in the body, the heart, the mind, I was able to work with the fear. And eventually, seeing that it was impermanent, that it was impersonal, meeting it with self-compassion, then it did eventually go away completely and genuinely. So that's just one simple example of the benefits of training in body literacy. And I'd like to practice with that again now. And because of the time in the retreat, the time of day immediately after lunch, this is a time when often there's a lot of sluggishness and heaviness and sleepiness. So I'd like to do this practice working together in pairs again, really refining mindfulness of speaking and listening as we also are refining mindfulness of the body. So I know some of you have done these practices a few times before. Nevertheless, it can be interesting to come back and see year by year just how the skills are developing. If, however, it doesn't feel like something you want to re-engage with, that's fine. Likewise, if you feel like staying in silence right now will be more supportive for your practice, then when we move into this next session, we're going to be standing and doing a little bit of walking here in the room. So if you decide to do some other form of practice, you're welcome to just disappear at that point.